Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hey there, welcome to ATL and 29, a podcast where we look at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta. My name is Kevin Chouinard. I'm here with Glenn Willis. We're recording on a Tuesday evening after the Hawks made a change at the head coaching position. Glenn, do you want to be the next full-time, not interim head coach of the Hawks?
I do not.
Oh, okay.
I don't.
Well, that was quick.
It's too much work. I mean, I love basketball. I love the coaching I get to do. I love working with kids. I know it's a silly hypothetical, but man, could you imagine going from like coaching like I do to like dealing with professional personalities, the whole organization, the media, the, you know, people like you, you know, asking tough questions all the time.
People like me. That was that took a dark turn.
All in good fun, but no, I mean, it's funny. Some people on Twitter have been kind of funny, like, hey, Glenn, you should be the coach. Like, I am not remotely qualified, but
it pays well.
I am interested to see how this new-ish front office navigates this. So there's that.
Yeah, it's certainly an opportunity to learn more about what this front office is going to be like. I think it's fair to try to make some evaluation of it. I guess there were a few lists and a few emphases on various candidates. Woj had a list. Shams had a list. I think Woj's list was, Kenny Atkinson, Quinn Snyder, and Charles Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shams had a bigger list that went to a few other folks. Were there any names on that list that struck out as likely or unlikely or good or not as good to you?
I mean, I think most of them are well-regarded, you know, coaches, and some of them have some ties, obviously, back to a prior era with the Hawks. By the way, I had the note here. I'm interrupting myself. I'm sick on my medication, so I'm blaming on that. So Nate now has a career winning percentage of 532, 510 with the Hawks, but his best playoff run certainly came with the Hawks there. But I mean, it's a little surprising to me, I guess, to see some of the assistants Bud had here in Atlanta come on the list. I didn't know how Ressler felt at this point in time about potentially kind of, you know, going in that direction and considering that. So that I find that interesting. You know, for me, people have been kind of asking me on Twitter a little bit, like, what's your opinion? Who should they get? I get asked about D'Antoni, and my response there was, I don't think he's the right person. I think they've had some turnover here the last, you know, three seasons now, four seasons, whatever we want to count. And I feel like they need to find a coach who can, you know, be in the job for, you know, 4 years, and to have those 4 years feel like the beginning of something and not, you know, a time to start winding down again and going in a new direction. And I'm not sure that that's what D'Antoni has to offer now. I don't want to speak for him. But, you know, I mean, my view of, like, Charles Lee, Kenny Atkinson, Quinn Snyder, like, they're very different people and coaches. And it's interesting to kind of, you know, play with, like, well, how would he look? You know, how would he look versus how would that guy look and stuff? And we can get into some of that if you want to. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how they navigate this, if they are truly patient. And, you know, presumably they can't get to a guy like Charles Lee until after the season. Same with Kenny Atkinson. You know, that I know that the Timberwolves a season and I guess it was a little more than a season and a half ago now, went out and got a guy from a staff, but that was early in the season, wasn't this late in the season where coaching staffs are really trying to kind of start to help build their team up for a postseason run. So, I find those names intriguing, and interesting, and we could talk about them in a little bit more depth and stuff like that. But I mean, there's not one that jumps out at me as like that's the guy they have to go get, or that's the guy I think they should go get. I don't think there is a name like that. I think they're starting to explore this, and they should be open-minded right now. That's my view.
Yeah, it's you kind of made one distinction that I think is important. But it's noteworthy that, first of all, that all three were names on the Woj list were former Mike Budenholzer assistants. They're all assistant coaches for whom Kyle Korver played. But you made the distinction that, Quinn Snyder can talk to the Hawks now because he's not in a position. Whereas Kenny Atkinson and Charles Lee have affiliations with teams. So, ostensibly they're going to finish out those jobs this season at least. And, even at the end of the season, I don't think contracts expire. I mean, I guess I don't really know that. I shouldn't say that without knowing. But, it may require, let's say, put it that way, they may have to get permission from their teams. And I think another important distinction is that while all three were assistants for the Hawks under Budenholzer, Snyder left in 2014. So he left before the wrestlers purchased the team, whereas Charles Lee, would have been here in Atlanta and, probably has some relationship with the wrestlers, some familiarity with them. And probably the same for Kenny Atkinson, although I think that's going to be a briefer overlap. He wasn't here quite as long. So, but I think, he probably has some familiarity with the wrestlers at least a little bit too. And it's going to be an interesting setup. Do you, do you, you made a tweet, specifically about Charles Lee. You said that you got to see him up close and personal because, you like to sit close to the benches in Las Vegas Summer League and eavesdrop. And so I would ask you, what was your experience in that regard like?
He just stood out a good bit around how engaged he was around all the details, coaching all positions. Really verbally encouraging guys to remember the plan, stick to the plan, stay on the plan. He had just a ton of energy. If you go to a full summer league like I have numerous times, understandably, you'll see a lot of coaches kind of wear down across the week and a half or whatever the length of the it is now. And he just never did. This has had to be what. 5, 6 years ago now, probably something in that range. I don't remember exactly what year it was. But just his positivity, his engagement, and his willingness to keep reminding young players the same thing over and over and over and over and over. Like that's the year that Diamond Stone played for the Hawks Summer League team. And after like two games of hearing Charles Lee yell like every 3 seconds when they're on defense. Hands, diamond hands, get your hand, as meaning to say, get your hands up, over. I mean, I was hearing that in my sleep. I was hearing that when I was trying to fall asleep, and so it just, he just like never stopped working as a coach. And, for me, that him, I think he and Taylor Jenkins both remind me most of Bud in that way that Bud coaches hard, Bud coaches really hard. Really persistently, and especially when his team is kind of starting to get a little off track, starting to get a little wobbly, he doesn't kind of disengage or kind of sit down. He really tries to coach his team through it. I think Bud is probably with a different team now that doesn't need that so much now. But when I watch Taylor Jenkins and Charles Lee, they remind me a lot of a guy who would just kind of try to coach a team through adversity, coach a team through a tough part in the game, coach a team that's being challenged to kind of maybe let go of their plan and coach them, back onto the plan. And that just struck me. That doesn't mean he's the best hire or whatever. I was just kind of sharing the observation that I don't know how many coaches I've observed from like right behind their bench in summer league. I don't know, at least 100, and he's not the only one, but he's just someone that just strikes you as it, that's just something that's different about him. And so I just thought I'd throw that observation out there.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, Bud had some veteran teams here too, and I don't necessarily think that would dissuade him from coaching hard because he coached hard with those veterans too. He was hard on some of them. He was like, really? You're gonna say that? Like,
And now I remember being a game in Milwaukee, and if you may remember this, the Hawks played there with the overtime, and the last three possessions, Al was so annoyed with Bud. All Al wanted to know was, am I in the pick and roll or am I going to the weak side corner? And Bud would just look at Al and go and scream at the top of his lungs, Al, and he'd point to the weak side corner, and Al looked like a little puppy dog kind of getting scolded and running to the weak side corner. And like Al's look was like, why are you screaming at me like this? Just tell me where you want me. And they were putting Paul in the pick and roll at that point in time. But it was, I think Bud has evolved a little bit since then, I
Yeah.
would guess, as we all do, right?
Right.
So it's just that's interesting. But I mean, the thing with Charles is that I think you see the same thing with Taylor, which is just the positivity, and the encouragement and things like that, which appeals to me. I think back to the coaching I got personally a million years ago, and I like a lot of the I think for a lot of athletes that kind of came through in the 80s or whenever, and struggle still as an adult with like some negative self-talk. I feel like I picked that all up from my coaches, where like if we lost, we were scum, we sucked, we were terrible, we should be totally ashamed of ourselves. And so when I see a coach second coach hard and be persistent with kind of the plan and the message, but do it with some positivity, that appeals to me. But just an observation, that doesn't mean that I think that he should be the guy that they go hire. I wanted to add though, I'll see if you agree, from Shams list. I mean, I don't think the Spurs would really. Are they going to keep Mitch Johnson from really exploring this, like right now, if that's what the Hawks want to do with the kind of season they're having, do you think?
No, I mean, I don't think that would. I think they have a track record of being fairly open of letting their assistants interview. I think there's a lot of precedent there,
Totally.
so.
Yeah, and I would imagine Landry has a relationship there, right?
Right.
And then Miles Simon's in the G League. I can't imagine they would hold him back. I mean,
Right.
this presumes the Hawks want to act quickly, And the only reason I'm interested in your thoughts. The only reason I think they would want to do that is that they think it might positively impact the season, which I think is kind of unrealistic for a new person to come in
Yeah, I
with
don't
what
think they
20,
nec
20.
I don't know that they necessarily want to have an impact this season. I think that, I think the main advantage is they're out in front of it. Like, hey, we're looking for a head coach, but so might these other teams. They might be looking for a head coach. If we're searching first, we might get, the pick of the crop, so to speak.
Yeah, true.
I mean, and of course,
Yeah.
it depends. Like, there's no guarantee that if you offer somebody the head coaching position that they're going to say, yep, I want it. I mean, there's a negotiation on finances. Like, Charles Lee's, he was probably here long enough to have a relationship with the wrestlers. But, if he's under contract with the Bucks, first of all, do they get permission? And then, like, I don't think, like, certainly if they have, he has his own relationship with the wrestlers, that's one thing, but he's also going to probably seek Bud's input on it. And I don't think Budenholzer left Atlanta on the greatest of terms with the wrestlers because he was demoted before he left. He was president of basketball operations and then he was down to the head coach again. So
And he didn't want to tank and rebuild,
no, he didn't want to tank and rebuild. Like the day of his exit interview before he left, we spent 15 minutes listening to Freebird while he lifted weights in the back room. I don't think that that was a coincidence.
yep, that makes sense to me. Another Charles Lee story. I remember in the Shelvin Mack years, as we all call those years,
Surely.
Shelvin wasn't playing very much. And I caught a few games where Shelvin was getting in some, I guess, cardio, we'll call it, before the game. And a lot of times you'll just see coaches, the coach is assigned to a player, you know, but have you just kind of stand there and, you know, monitor or whatever. And Shelvin was running sideline to sideline to sideline to sideline to sideline. I mean, I lost count like how many times he did it. Charles Lee ran everyone with him, every single one with him, like everyone. And that to me is
He
just something
was
that they were.
young to you know, he's certainly younger then.
He was, but it's
But
still
not
just
every
something
young
that's
coach would do that.
no, yeah. I mean, and coaching is a tiring job. You're up late, you're game planning, you're watching whatever, you know. And they, to me, again, that doesn't mean he's gonna be like the next great coach or whatever, but it's just something that you see that you're like, that's different. That's different, you know. And it, to me, it catches my eye.
Okay.
How do we memorialize Nate's tenure with the Hawks here?
I mean, I guess if memorialize. I mean, I guess if you look sort of at the big picture, I mean, like, he started with a bang. I think we almost said it at the time, like it was sort of best of both worlds because you got Nate's leadership, but you sort of had the offensive vision of Lloyd Pierce and the rest of his staff, and it worked kind of well. And then as bits and pieces of that started to pull away in the subsequent years, the scheming didn't quite keep up with what it was in that first run. So, I mean, I guess predictable, consistent, but that comes with good and bad things. Like, I think the players sort of liked the consistency under Nate. Like, I'm sure there are always going to be players who are frustrated at times, but I think there's a certain level of familiarity where you can, expect certain things from the rotation. And I think some of the players kind of liked that. I think that played into the stability for the team when it was going well. But at times, it comes with drawbacks too, because you want to be a little more reactive to the circumstances around you. And Nate was more of a consistency guy. And so, he would kind of keep doing the same thing. And, while that gives a certain familiarity to the players and lets them know what to expect, it also doesn't put players necessarily in the best positions to succeed if the conditions around them change quite a bit. So, it's sort of good and bad. And, he's a good head coach. Like, he's smart. He knows basketball. He's been doing it a long time. He's got a heck of a lot of NBA wins. He doesn't have a lot of postseason success, but he's a basketball lifer. He knows the gig.
Yeah, I know we had a kind of in-depth conversation that it felt like the first month or first 6 weeks of the season where I was explaining my view that I did this with Brad too. Don't fire me for mentioning Brad here. Hi, Brad. That my view is that Nate's not a solutions coach. He's someone who really wants his team to focus on the basics and the fundamentals. And I've said all along that in my experience personally coaching and then even observing, professional levels and all that sort of stuff is that I think getting back to the basics and the fundamentals and correcting things in that area is the solution 80% of the time. That's just my guess, right?
Yeah.
More a majority of the time, that's where your performance is breaking down, right? And for, where the, I mean, if you kind of looked at the areas where the Hawks struggled under the previous head coach, as good as that offense could be sometimes, that's where they would just completely lose control of games. You know, basic execution, defensive half court, things like that. And Nate is awesome at that stuff and really drives that stuff home. And I think there has been some benefit, coming from that. I think Hawks fans can think whatever they want. Individual Hawks fans can have whatever view they want, obviously, can voice whatever they want. But to say that nothing good came from this, that no growth came from this, that nothing positive came from this, I think is being taking too narrow of a view. And did this seem inevitable at some point? It kind of did. I mean, especially when we heard the noise what a month back when he said to himself, yeah, we all he said to himself while everybody was listening, we all think about retiring, and that was to me, kind of an obvious message that, okay, it certainly seems like he's going to retire at the end of the season. So I can't imagine. I mean, I don't know Nate at all, but I can't imagine he's necessarily feeling brokenhearted about not finishing here. If what you hear about Nate is, is factual, is that he wants, I'm sure he was wishing good things for the team and the organization and the next person and, and all that sort of stuff.
I mean, his son's
I
still on
do.
the coaching staff.
Absolutely.
I'm sure he's wishing
Absolutely.
that things
Right.
go well for his son for the rest of the season. Like if that team, goes on a run, I'm sure he'll be rooting for the Hawks,
Absolutely.
for that reason.
Yeah, agreed. And but I do think, sometimes that there is an underappreciation for what the collective staff means, right? I think too much focus on Lloyd Pierce. I thought Lloyd built a really good staff. I thought like Marlon Garnett was great in his, for what he kind of brought to the guards. And, I think the world of Alvin Hunt and what he brought, kind of offensively, especially, and Chris Gents a really good coach, and we could go kind of on and on. I think Matt Hill's going to be a really good head coach one day down the road if you just kind of follow his role and what he's had the opportunity to do at Team USA, kind of stuff. I think that suggests that he's got some potential, but it will be interesting to see not only who they hire, but it really, really is important that a really good staff is put together and developed. And I felt like that was where some of, and this isn't me like trying to trash any of the current staff that they have. I just think that I think LP had a really good staff, and some of the losses there would have taken some time to kind of recover some of the collective strength and capability and talent that that staff had. And Nate went from interim to being hired, kind of right away. And I think some, in a way that makes it harder. Nate wasn't going to necessarily go back and kind of build an entire staff from scratch. That doesn't really make much sense when you're getting carried over. But he did lose, I thought, some of the key assistant coaches there. So it's not just his hire. It's also about getting kind of a staff put together that can maybe put player development a little bit higher priority than it's been with Nate. Can kind of put a multi-year vision in place and get a staff that can kind of commit in to working through that with them. So you know me, I'm optimistic. I'm excited to see what they do. I wrote a piece through Hoops that I wasn't thrilled with kind of how the whole Travis transition, if we want to call it that, happened. I wrote that it didn't seem clear to me at the time, like who's actually making decisions here, and does it, and even if we were told who's making decisions, does it make sense? But at the same time, I also said I thought they handled the trade deadline very well. I thought they did great. And so here's another opportunity. So while I don't like kind of the path that got them to where they are in some ways, I also am careful to not say that I am, closing my mind to the possibility that they might find a way to be successful. And so the one kind of big opportunity to judge them, the trade deadline, I give them an A plus. So let's see how they handle this. And I'm eager to see how they handle it. And we'll see how they do. And when they make a decision, we'll share our perspectives on it, I suppose.
You mentioned player development a minute ago, and I think that's kind of a key touchstone. I think it was a big moment for Nate when he said something, I think it was in the preseason or in camp, and he's like, we're not about development anymore. And that felt like a little bit like hyperbole. It probably got blown out of proportion for what it was, but I still think it's interesting to just look at sort of the continuum of player development under both Lloyd Pierce and then Nate McMillan, because I think for the players like Trae Young and John Collins, because those are really the two that have been here through all of it, this is great. Like, they're really good players. I never really got to doing it this season, but like, it's remarkable like how good John Collins is on defense compared to what he was as a rookie. Like, it's
It's
just
impressive.
mind blowing. Like, I can't wrap my head around it. Like Trey has matured a lot. He does so much on a basketball court. Like if you look at player development for those two, it's great. Where I think, you know, it comes up short is for those players who came in just under Nate. Because I think if it had just been under Lloyd Pierce, you know, I think Nate really helped guys like Trey and John mature into professionals. And he came at the perfect time for them. But for guys like Jalen and Onyeka, it's a little bit of a different story. Like they might need somebody new for their development. And right. I'm curious to see how those guys look under the next coaching regime.
Yes, likewise, I think that was really well said. And also, like for Onyeka to be here for, you know, for this stretch of time where development hasn't been maybe the priority it should have been, depending on, you know, whose perspective you're kind of asking for there. And to be this good, I think just says so much about how good he's going to be, you know. He's just kind of pushed through it, you know. And that's not to say that assistant coaches haven't been working hard, you know, with their players, that they're, you know, they have a development plan and things like that. It's just that it hasn't been kind of the organizational priority, or it wasn't the priority with Nate. I think what Nate was saying was, we're not going to sacrifice wins for the sake of development. I think that's what he meant, right?
For sure. Oh, yeah.
Not that there's going to be no development, but I mean, I was frustrated last game when Jalen didn't play until garbage time. We talked about that, you know?
Yeah.
And a part of this change is just to maybe kind of get that part of the plan a little bit different, you know, where, hey, Jalen needs to play. I'll be thrilled with that, you know? But we'll see how that goes. I respect Joe Prunty. You know, I think he's a good coach. I don't really have an opinion on him as a head coach. We've never kind of seen it apart from him finishing out that season in Milwaukee, which is a tough task, you know, for anyone. I mean, Nate stepped in as a guy who'd been a head coach for a long time. You know, Joe didn't have that luxury when he stepped in Milwaukee. But I think Joe Prunty's a guy, if they carry him over, I would be happy to see that, just because I think he's just, you know, if you look what he did in San Antonio and kind of how respected he is from that time and everything, I think he's, you know, he's good. But it'll be interesting to see. It's kind of funny. So I gave my opinion on Charles Lee. I laugh myself when I think about Quinn Snyder and Trae Young working together, because my view of Quinn, I'm saying this for a fact, I'm not using the word because I actually think Quinn is one, but Quinn strikes me from my observations as being a bit of a psychopath for the details, like really, really detailed, you know. And if you're watching Rudy Gobert being coached not by Quinn Snyder, you know, I don't know that another coach will ever get as much out of Rudy Gobert that Quinn Snyder did, you know. And maybe I'm not giving Trey enough credit for being able to adapt to a coach who coaches at that granular of a level that hard, you know, and that aggressively. But to me, it just, on the surface, it seems like that would be an odd pairing, because I think Trey wants a certain amount of freedom, he wants to be able to deploy a certain amount of artistry within his game, if you will. And Quinn is like super rigid around the detail. Now maybe Quinn's a little different his next go around too. You know, I don't know, but that just kind of strikes me as funny. Kenny in Brooklyn was super accommodating, and maybe that's what got him in trouble once KD and Kyrie, you know, showed up. Is that he was accommodating with a younger team. He had his team, young team in Brooklyn, played really fast. I thought they always played better than their actual talent and experience level. Kenny seems like just an awesome person, you know, but I don't have necessarily a kind of a really specific thought around how good of a fit I think that would be. I think Kenny's would be a good coach for almost any team, you know, is my view. And I respect the work that he did in Brooklyn, committing to trying to work with a young team, not chasing wins, not worrying about his legacy, and just trying to build up his young players. And you kind of see like what Jared Allen's doing. He's in Cleveland now, but what a heck of a player he is, you know. And you can see like even a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie, like kind of, you know, what he has become along the way, and so forth, you know. And so it's, you know, It's going to be interesting to see who they hire, but the one that strikes me is I think of Quinn Snyder a bit of a cartoon villain kind of style, just because the demeanor he takes on the sideline and things like that. And I'm sure he's a wonderful person and all that, but that just kind of strikes me as being the most peculiar potential fit, just because I think stylistically it'd be different. But again, once again, I'm not going to sit here and say that it wouldn't work if that's the way they go.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's funny to kind of look at the way that things ended in Utah, and it really didn't seem like anybody was particularly happy after years under Snyder in Utah. Like, it just
Right.
seemed like everybody was kind of sick of each other.
Right. But it's like, how much of
Kind
that,
of in
like,
all corners, and you
I
just
know. And
wonder
it,
if the heavy-handedness kind of, like, not even in like year one, but like you get to year three, year four, like that sort of heavy-handed, detail-oriented approach, I wonder if that sort
yeah.
of grates after a while.
I know. And it's hard to, like, pick out one thing, like, it seems Donovan and Rudy didn't always get along, and like, was
Right.
Quinn sick of that? Like, Rudy's just a little different, you know. Now, like, I'll say over and over and over, like, Rudy, no one has impressed me more with like his conditioning, a player in the league like Rudy. Like, the reason Rudy got so good on defense, to me, the primary reason was just he got in such great shape, you know, that you can't really kind of fault that. And then the final variable is Danny shows up, you know?
Right.
And I don't know that Danny's always super transparent about his plan with everyone. You know, he's got a plan A, plan B, C, D, E, F, and G, and not everyone likes that, you know? So that probably was some portion of that too. But it is gonna be interesting to see kind of where Quinn falls next, because I think he had a lot of success there. I think he really had a got a lot of success out of the roster that he had there, even though, you know, Donovan and Rudy are two of the high profile guys in the league. I think getting those guys to work on both ends was the challenge, and I thought he did quite well. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how this goes. I don't really have an expectation as to whether they wait till after the season or kind of find something they can make happen now. I don't think it's really gonna have much of an impact on the rest of this season the other way. But if this is, like, you know, like I said, evaluation opportunity number one was the trade deadline. Great job. We'll see how they do here. My fingers are crossed that they do good work, find a good situation, and everybody's feeling good about things, you know, come June, July timeframe at the latest, I think. And there's some positivity and optimism around the team. It's always a good thing and enjoyable thing. And hopefully Hawks fans can kind of feel encouraged for what might be possible beyond this year.
Yeah, as you bring it back to the front office, one thing that and also bringing it back to the what remains of this season, one thing that I mean, it's always going to be hard to say, what do you actually have in this front office, because it hasn't been a draft yet. Like, there's just so many things that go into it. But one thing that I'm tracking, and it's not just what the front office thinks and what the coach thinks, it's also what the players put into it. But I'm eager to see, and again, it's not necessarily these two pitted against each other, but I'm eager to see sort of the Jalen Johnson, Sadiq Bey fallout going forward. Because, if Sadiq is sort of prioritized going forward over Jalen, or at the expense of Jalen, with this front office sort of making the Bey move, and the previous front office being the ones that drafted Jalen, like, I think that would be a mistake. Like, I just think there's so much more promise on Jalen's side.
Agreed.
And to fall in love with your own transaction would be a deep mistake. So if they, I'm just hoping that they view Sadiq as a useful piece. There's probably room to develop both of them, but if one gets developed over the other the wrong way, I think that would be a little bit of a red flag going forward. And to backtrack a little bit to Kenny Atkinson, I think he would be a little bit more in the middle ground between the positivity of somebody like Charles Lee and sort of the grinder that Quinn Snyder is. And it would be interesting, can he win over, a superstar like Trey? But I think he might be able to. Like, I think he kind of could tiptoe the balance, and between the grind and being sort of the player side coach, but I think he also sees the game from a point guard's perspective. So I think, if he was in that locker room with Trey for a while, he'd probably get Trey's respect. I really do think that he kind of sees the game from the point guard point of view. He sort of played it as a point guard himself. Dennis Schroeder could not refer to Kenny Atkinson enough when Dennis was here. I think he used Kenny Atkinson's name more than any player used any assistant coach's name ever, because he just, he gushed over what he learned from Kenny. And I think that kind of relationship, would be a good indicator of, what he might be able to work with Trey. Not that Trey needs a whole lot of point guarding prowess. Like, he's a prodigy point guard, but just the fact that he could see the game that way, from Trey's point of view, I think it would go well.
Yeah, I think he could manifest ideas around what Trey needs around him, right? And and how to maximize Trey, not just through helping Trey continue to get better, but also kind of building a plan and and collaborating on a roster construction that emphasizes Trey's abilities and strengths and sets the team up for the most success, taking full advantage of all the Trey kind of brings to bear. I'm not sure, that seems to be something where I don't think Nate always kind of hit the mark on that. Nate wants his team to play defense and all that sort of stuff. But I do think someone who kind of see through that lens could potentially be a person that could help them set the right formula to get them back on track with Trey help leading the way towards being a top five offense, and then hopefully continuing to build some reliable defense to play too. But I like that idea, for sure.
Anything else before we depart?
I don't think so. I don't, I, there will inevitably be one or two or three more names that come up. I just want to say, like, across the league, guys that I'm watching next round, Sam Cassell. I think I've talked about him a little bit. I think he's going to be a really good head coach in the league, but keep an eye on Sean Sweeney as lead assistant, and I think he's the lead assistant in Dallas. He's a key assistant in Dallas. He coached with Joe Parenti in Milwaukee on Jason Kidd's staff there. I think he's a kind of up and coming guy in the league, and we'll see what other name might kind of pop out there. I would guess that if Sam Cassell was going to be on the list, that would already kind of be out there, unless Doc is just like, nope, we're not putting anything out. My team is too easily distracted anyway. I think this offseason we're going to see Sam Cassell's name really kind of thrown out there as a guy who's going to get a chance to go get an open head coaching position. And I think Sean Sweeney has, worked with, that Milwaukee group. He worked with Dwayne Casey for a couple seasons in Detroit, and last year was really key to kind of the defensive execution they had there in Dallas. I just think he's an up and coming guy. So just want to throw out a couple more names that I think wouldn't be surprised if not if they don't get associated with this process as other teams start looking for coaching changes, might get associated with them as well. So just I don't want Hawks fans to think this is the list. I think there's inevitably going to be a few more names that come out along the way.
Very good. Well, it's interesting. Kenny's got a trip to Atlanta coming up when the Warriors come to town, so we'll see. We've already had Charles Lee through here, so we'll
Yeah, I
see what
can't
it
wait to
looks
hear
like
that
when
Joe.
Kenny gets here.
I can't wait to hear that Kenny got an interview, and then Joe Lacob made the Hawk made Tunney pay for his hotel room for the night or something like that.
All right, then. Thanks, Glenn.
Thanks, Kevin.